Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, not a V-neck, but we're working on it with some loose button work. My good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Good. I'm feeling the polo today, man. That's what's going on.
Well, you actually had to work, right?
Yeah, this is true. I am taking a brief pause from regular work to enjoy some time to play and talk Magic. Sadly, I have not played any Magic this week.
Yeah, it's your busy season, right? Like, your duties include lots of editing and planning and yelling at the craft service foods people for not getting the correct brand of Gouda. I know how you get about your Gouda. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, like, my concern right now is wondering when the Llama Limbo will actually take place, right? So, like, that's literally what I'm, like, working on right now.
Will there be mutton busting?
Oh, there will be mutton busting.
And
you put a G at the end of that. You mispronounced it.
So for those of you who are unaware, mutton busting is sheep rodeo.
With little kids.
Little kids.
Yeah.
It's fine. What could...
I've seen more tears that way than I care to admit. Like,
When they triumph.
Yes.
And you see that you shed a single tear. It's like an episode of Friday Night Lights, right? Like, all of a sudden you're like, man, it's... The air quality here has suddenly changed. It's very dusty.
Yeah, a little verklempt.
Yeah. So, Cameron, we both kind of had uneventful weeks. There's quite a little bit to talk about. Our audio quality is going to be better than it was last week because I'm not FaceTiming the whole thing in from a budget business motel or hotel room or whatever the heck that was.
That was quality, man. I loved it.
Hey, we got a lot to talk about just through Legacy, which... You and I have such a passion for, and we don't get to talk about nearly enough. But this week, you have played Zero.
Yeah.
And I was so eager because I came back from Minneapolis. Not kidding you, I had like 10 packages of cards in the mail that I had.
Nice. And this is all through Cardsphere, right?
Or yes.
A blend? Okay.
Don't jump in the show notes, Cameron.
Sorry. Well, you did write that down. Sorry.
Come on. I had those waiting for me, cracked them open, and I tried to explain to my wife one of the most satisfying feelings in the world is when you have a, you know, M14 or whatever, Sharpied proxy in a deck that you've been practicing, you remove the Sharpied marker card, and then you put in the card that you've received. I mean,
it's true.
Actual best feeling in the world.
It is great. I mean, everything from, like, finally putting that volcanic island to, I mean, even the smallest of things like a elvish visionary, right? Yeah.
When it all comes together, it's like you actually hear the Halo theme song. I mean, it's that powerful. Yeah. It's a powerful thing that non-magic people, muggles, if you will, just don't get. Right? My wife's like, hey, you got a bunch of packages, some cards, you know? And I act like a toddler on Christmas, you know? Anyway, so I got it together, showed up to this new shop that I've been playing Modern at, and their Modern scene is fine. It's like 8 to 12 people or whatever. I've been playing there for about a month. And showed up to play their F&M Standard. Walk in, there's a draft pod firing for the new core set. I wait, and there's me and another guy, and then it becomes apparent that Friday Night Magic for Standard will not fire at this shop, which is pretty frustrating because I'd worked so much on the meta, and I was really interested. I'm also going to play Standard next week, so I decided to drive to another shop to see if they actually had an F&M that fired, and they did. They had like 20 people. So I just kind of missed out, and I chose poorly.
Yeah.
And I was really interested to see how much the meta has shifted because of the Nexus of Fate deck. And, you know, now we're starting to see bug aggro as a result, people playing Duress and Doomfall more often. Like, there's a reaction to it. But I was also not prepared for, how to say this. I walk into the Standard tournament and they are way past time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a guy playing the Turbo Fog Mirror and basically not playing with any sort of speed whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the cards should have been scooped up forever as soon as they hit turns. The opponent actually let him loop Nexus of Fate through the turns.
Oh, man.
I've never seen anything like that before in my entire life. And the mono-red opponent just sat there and let him happen. I guess he was getting his money's worth for the evening or what?
I guess, yeah.
But it was weird.
I mean, is there a strategy behind that where, like, you're just delaying the game so you tie? I mean, is that the strategy, I guess, or?
No, because he was already down one game to nothing.
Okay.
It was game two. So it was just... So
annoying
he could,
Curtis.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm the biggest believer in, and I know some people are going to have a strong distaste for this, but when you are aware that it is over, and it is a fine line sometimes, mm-hmm. pick up your cards. Don't make everybody wait on you because you want to be sure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I can just stereotype for a second, Cameron, I see this in Legacy all the time, where opponent dredges, makes, you know, a bazillion zombies, passes to the guy, and he just sits there and looks at Plains and Mother of Runes and is like, it's like, dude, come on. What are you doing? Just pick up your cards. Right? So we got time here. It's a very valuable resource when it comes to Magic tournaments. So anyway, I didn't actually get to play in paper, which was super frustrating for me. But I did get to do a lot of Arena. And I will say, whenever Arena is your sole outlet for playing Magic Online, boy, the inability to trade in and out of decks stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are just stuck on... I mean, I played Steel Leaf Stompy through 7 leagues or something. And with something like that that's so rote, you know, you kind of... And that deck is... I like it, and I think it's a good choice. However, it reminds me a lot of, and there's going to be a few listeners who remember this, the Noble Hierarch decks in a Lara Block standard, like Naya, where either the deck does something and it is busted and amazing and puts a ton of power on the board real quick, or you draw nothing but your 4 drops and some lands and you lose like horribly. Mm-hmm. And it looks so, you know, there's no way to filter your deck. The control matchup is just completely wretched. But against everything else, I feel like you have a really strong game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit, Cameron, and let's talk about... So we're going to do, because we're mixing segments up a little bit, I want to do the mystery box super quickly. So just to give you an update, we're up to 285 on the value. So we've grown 28.45%.
Jeez.
On our reserve list investment that Curtis made in 1996.
3% gain or something from last week? That's insane. That's great.
Yep. We're headed towards 300, man. Wow. So, you know, last week I said maybe we'll give it away to a listener. Maybe I'll buy a BMW. You know, who's to say?
Every week we're going to keep the listeners guessing, right?
What's in the box? Could be anything. Could be a boat, right? Maybe a boat isn't a great investment when you live in the middle of Missouri. I get that. But it could be. It could be a yacht, man.
A man can dream.
Man can dream. So, hey, so I do want to kind of give a full finished review of Cardsphere in that I've used the service for more than a month now.
Mm-hmm.
I've successfully withdrawn cash. So that is the big part of the service that differentiates it from other trading services, in my mind, is that you grow a balance and then you can withdraw that balance. Yes, there's a processing time, but then it ends up in your PayPal account and you have that cash. So that happened. The process was very smooth. It was basically automated and I got an email when it was completed. So I've completed, I don't know how many trades on Cardsphere, but Cameron, I put together, so we are playing Legacy in October. Mm-hmm. My goal was to finish Miracles by that stage. Okay?
Sure.
I only injected $50 of cash. The rest I traded. I traded no cards away that were on the reserve list to get to that stage. Zero.
That's really amazing.
So, yes, it was a lot of $2 and $3 bits and boops. And, oh, hey, this is a commander card that's worth $5. This is another commander card that's worth $5. I have a ton of that stuff. You know, I'm not the guy that like, oh, hey, I just opened my, and here's a whole set of Arabian Nights that I can, that's just not what happens. And so being able to switch legacy decks without spending a lot of cash is the biggest compliment I can give to this service, and how quickly I got things like Jace's, like Berserks, like not new Berserks from Conspiracy. I got unlimited Berserks through the service. So yes, you kind of have to be aware of the game and how to play it and what you need to do. But I mean, basically I got three quarters of the way through an old school deck. I got Mono Black, which is kind of a more budgety deck. I've got all of Steel Leaf Stompy this way. I bought zero of the cards through Steel Leaf Stomp or through like another service. And I've suggested it to multiple friends. So, Cameron, when the Iowa State Fair is over, here's what I want you to do.
Okay.
I want you to post and sell at least two things on Cardsphere just to see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm doing you a service if I do this.
No, you're probably right. I mean, when you just said withdraw cash, like, you know, I had the money signs in my eyes. No, that sounds really, really fascinating. The thing that that concerns me most about this is, yes, you aren't paying essentially anything for these decks. How much time were you investing throughout the summer to get to that level?
Well, so a large chunk of my time is devoted to how unorganized my cards are.
Okay.
Okay, so let's, if you want, like, I sold a ton of my trade binder that, you know, I'm trying to think, things like Pithing Needle and stuff like that that are just in my trade binder forever that no one wants at my shop. You know, if you know it's there, it's basically you say that you have it in Cardsphere, say, match me with someone, right? This is like, I believe, how millennials use dating services, Cameron. Okay? It just matches you with someone that says, hey, I'm willing to pay this much for it, and it with these conditions, these languages, and you say, sure, I'll send it. You throw it in a top loader with a sleeve. You put it in an envelope. You put a stamp on the envelope. You put it in the mail.
See, that seems easy. I think it's the organization for me as well, because, like, I have, like, the stuff that I play with every single week or, you know, like, or just swapping things out that are in just a big binder, and that's all organized. And then I just have boxes of Theros and upwards, right, of stuff, and I just need to go through it and organize it, and that just is, like, this mind-numbing prospect for me. That is probably worthwhile.
That is not the thing you should sell on Cardsphere.
Okay.
Because that's like bulk, basically, right? I mean, you might have stuff in there that's worth something. I don't know. But if we're talking Theros bulk, that's just not going to be the thing. But let's pretend, because I feel like you mentioned humility for some reason.
Yeah, I have that in my binder.
Okay,
yeah.
You might have said, Curtis, you need some humility. I can't remember how that conversation went. It's very fuzzy. But but like something like that, you could move on Cardsphere. It would be so earth-shatteringly quick.
Yeah.
And you'd have that cash balance back. Now, setting up your wants is another kind of tricky thing that if you want it for cash, you could definitely do it for that. For me, there's always a running wants list of things that, you know, like I need another certain number of, like, brainstorms.
Sure, yeah.
You know, just stuff like that. Because I have, like, multiple decks that have brainstorm in it, and I don't want to have to keep swapping brainstorms. And I only play Ice Age Brainstorm, Cameron. Don't even look at me like that.
Hey, I'm not judging.
Okay. What are you, a mask? Are you a mask man?
I got masks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's nice. Incorrect, clearly, but that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. No, I would really judge you if it was like the newest, like.
Oh, new the yeah, no way. No way, man.
Yeah. You got to, it's old border or nothing, you know?
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so. Highly recommend the service. I've had great trade velocity and great experience. I just keep churning through cards that I need and want. And, dude, it's a blast. It's also, and this is kind of a weird thing, it's a good way to get rid of foils. Sometimes foils are really hard to sell. I've gone through their Discord to do that. Because sometimes my foils are signed because of that art show that was in Kansas City. And you're not supposed to list signed cards. You're supposed to just check with people. And so I just like post, hey, here's some signed cards. And I get matches like real fast, like within hours. All right, so let's get out of the segment. Come back. I want to discuss with you, Cameron, the limited problem. All right, Cameron, so where to start with this? There's been a lot of chatter this week following the Pro Tour. So this most recent Pro Tour, there was no limited because it was a team Pro Tour. About kind of the status of limited as it relates to the Pro Tour. So essentially, for those of you who don't know, in the Pro Tour, a regular Pro Tour, they have to draft the newest set, and usually that's six rounds, I think, something like that. There's also, of course, some number of limited GPs that happen. It used to be that there were exclusively limited Pro Tours and exclusively constructed Pro Tours, but they kind of merged together in an effort to kind of make the champion a more well-rounded Magic player, I think, would be the belief. And also, you know, hey, you show off the product that you're currently selling.
For sure.
Maria from Magic the Amateuring, she tweeted out a bunch about this, and then Marshall discussed it on his show. So there's Marshall Sutcliffe. So there's been a lot of discussions revolving around this, and I couldn't source the exact starting point.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know your thoughts, Cameron, both as someone who, I mean, clearly hates limited. I'm kidding. You don't hate limited, you're not a limited grinder. And someone who covers things like that other people might consider. I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but some people might consider some of the things that covered at the Iowa State Fair, like the butter cow, to be not necessarily interesting.
Absurd. Yeah.
But it's your job to make it intriguing and interesting and all those things, right?
For sure. Yeah.
Anyway, go. What do you think, man? What's the solution?
I like drafting a lot. Like, I mean, I really, really do. I just don't do it often. And I feel like you have to be really invested in the set and really, really know those cards. And you have to be practiced at it every single day, every single week. And there's just so much Magic out there, and especially in my shop, that my choice of playing something like Legacy is always going to outweigh playing Limited. That's just where it's at. So I set the record straight. I don't hate limited, but I do hate watching limited draft. It grinds things to a halt, in my opinion. I watch, you know, when I want to watch a new deck being played, like learn how to play mono green Stompy or 12 poster, you know, any of these types of decks, I will go onto YouTube and watch hours of content of people streaming and playing certain decks because I want to get better with those decks and how to play them properly. So with limited, the way that the drafting works and everything, I just don't think it lends itself well. And some people might like watching it, but I just don't feel like it lends itself with the drama and the way that a head-on-head sort of competition works. The way that it does with like standard or modern or anything like that. And I always go back to something like, if you're looking at like League of Legends or Overwatch or any of these other like games that have like a huge following as far as like Twitch viewers and whatnot, the decision making of like selecting a character, while it's very, very important to the game, and people will lose their minds over like how those things will kind of fall into place, it all happens within 3 minutes, you know, or very, very quickly. And then the game that everybody wants to watch actually happens. And that's where I feel like the drafting aspect of like a Pro Tour or just watching it online just doesn't connect with me, because while you can see those decision-making processes happening, watching or trying to keep track of eight people all doing the same thing and making those choices, just I feel like almost like if you're just trying to jump right into the watching this like halfway through, you're going to be lost. And I think that's where the issue is for me when it comes to watching drafting.
I completely agree. I think there are a couple answers here. Some people have talked about, so the Silver Showcase draft and the beta draft, I would say not the games, but the drafting is Rochester, and that's the kind where you open the packs, put them face up on the table, and then you actually know what everybody at the table's picking. Mm-hmm. So Rochester was a very popular draft style in the early days of Magic, and just in terms of time, because you're opening 24 packs on the table or what, you know, like it takes a minute. I think that could make more dramatic drafting, but I think, first of all, I think we just have to be talking about digital. I really do. I think that is, if there's any hope for limited, it has to be via Arena. I don't think Magic Online would make for much more interesting watching than that. But if you used a digital client for the games specifically, because sometimes limited games are really brutal, boring to watch too, because it is essentially, you have a 4-mana 3-3, I have a 3-3 flyer, so now I've won. Yeah. You know, there, sometimes games don't have these climactic finishes, or the decks, as they're constructed because of how limited works, you don't have the swings that you do in constructed, right? And that inherently, I think, leads to less interesting Magic. That being said, maybe watching it in a digital form would make it more interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at a professional level, I think that could be also how you expose Arena and expose the new set. And, you know, it's much more colorful and all those things. But then you'd also, for the drafting, theoretically it happens faster if it's on a computer. But you would need something. Do you know what StatCast is for, like, baseball, where they show a ball and it shows, like, how hard it was hit and stuff?
Yeah.
Where, like, something is by the players and kind of indicates while they're going who's picking what or whatever. I think with limited, the nature of it is so skill intensive that trying to hit a low common denominator with it is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And I think you could actually put in more information, like who's doing what at each table, who's picked what, like some kind of live thing. Obviously, you would have to do like a minute or two delay just to kind of get around rule issues. But I think that would make a more interesting watch, because I'm getting all this information as it's happening, and I could see somebody move into colors or whatever. But, you know, you're going to mention Overwatch. I'm going to mention Overwatch. They clearly have dumped a lot of money into their setup. But there's a lot of information being thrown at the viewer all the time. And I would say the same thing is true of Evo. And a lot of that is also by the fact that they don't have to travel, like, as much or at all. And so, you know, you could really, the production issues that exist around this stuff, you could plan around by having your own building. But that's another kind of discussion. I do want to say this, though. Not you, but other people online, Cameron. Never you. Have trashed Unlimited as a result of this. I think Limited is incredibly important to the success of Magic.
Yeah.
And it is the most accessible, like, it's super important to getting players into the game. And to discount, because anytime somebody starts playing Magic, the first thing I say is draft for 1 year. Just do nothing but draft. You'll build a collection. You'll be ready for Standard. You'll have stuff. You'll be ready to go, you know? But, and again, why am I trashing on Legacy players today, Cameron? I'm one of them. I don't know what's going to, but you know, you always have these people come in that say, Limited is actually a terrible investment. If you buy your Modern deck, it might, you know, or your Legacy deck, it'll just stay there and you won't lose any money and blah, 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 blah. But we have to acknowledge that there needs to be a low level cost entry point for new players, and Limited is that. So, even though you hate it, right, Cameron?
I hate it, yes.
Speaking of cost, hey, I wanted to react to this. So Saffron Olive on MTG Goldfish is apparently writing an article about the expense of Modern, and he tweeted out an infographic that I well, maybe it was just information in a table, not an infographic, that I
it
thought was
graphical.
Yeah. It was an image. So I guess we're kind of like prelude to his article or whatever, but it really kind of sparked my brain. I wanted to discuss this, but basically he took the cost of the major decks from 2017 to now, and the cost of almost all of them has gone up, except for Storm, I believe. And I'm fairly certain he's using the version of Storm that is not using Fetchlands. So,
oh, it has to be, yeah.
I want to hear your opinion on this, Cameron. Is Modern too expensive? Are they reprinting fast enough?
Three little words for you, dude. Just play Burn.
Oh, no. Not you, too.
Yeah. No. This is so tough for me now that I have these cards, if Modern is too expensive. Because when I got into Magic, Modern was too expensive. Mm-hmm. The cost of a Scalding Tarn was like $90, upwards of like $100 at the time, I think. And this was like, you know, right after Theros and Born of the Gods and whatnot. And that's when I started trying to build a Modern collection. And those cards were so expensive. Like, it was really, really hard to get into Modern. Then we had Cons come out, and that reprinted all Pluto Delta and all that stuff. And the cost of Modern all of a sudden dropped down because, like, all of a sudden new decks are kind of were able to be built because of the influx fetches. Of the other fetches, right? But steadily, we've only had one reprinting of certain cards, and we're at a point now where I feel like Modern's back to kind of where it was. I mean, it was never like this expensive, but yeah, I don't know what the answer is because, as we've discussed in previous episodes, like the Masters sets in their current iterations doesn't seem to be the answer. It's people don't like it. I mean, yes, it does put more cards into the wild, but it just doesn't seem to be satisfying all the needs that it's trying to answer. I don't know what the right answer is other than like just more reprints in like core sets, maybe. I mean, maybe that's where we do find them is Scapeshift, right? I mean, M19, just randomly it's in there. It makes no sense why it's in there other than they needed to put it out into the wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an alarming thing that we're kind of to this stage where Modern is more expensive than Legacy is when I came back to the game however many years ago, about 10 years ago. And not by like a little, but a lot. Like this is, you know, Scalding Tarn was like what a Tundra was when I came back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think the subtext of this, if you look at the past years, also Standard has really had a rough 2017 specifically. Mm-hmm. And really a lot of people said, I think I'm just going to play Modern because I don't want to have to put up with this.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's interesting about the Modern economy, and we saw this from time to time with Legacy, is sometimes the cost doesn't seem to fluctuate with the reprint. It seems to fluctuate more often with the playability, and even then, sometimes the popularity of the deck kind of rescues or buoys the cost of something like, I think they call it price memory in the MTG finance community. But Tarmogoyf's price really hasn't been impacted by the reprints. It got impacted by the fact that Jund isn't as good. Mm-hmm. Right, and that things like Death Shadow and Gurmag Angler can rumble with it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Vendilion Click. Vendilion Click is not as good of a card in the format, right? And so that's really tanked its value. So we could go on and on like this. The thing that worries me about all this investment in Modern is we're going to get to a point where we continually don't ban things and have highly competitive events, and that the format just keeps getting faster. And you have people kind of holding onto these decks, and Wizards going, oh my God, we've got to reprint. I'm trying to think of something that they don't need to reprint that's expensive.
Manamorphose?
something like that. And then they miss out on printing things like the fetch lanes. You know, like the filter lands would be a great example.
Okay,
those really didn't need to be reprinted. Like, they're occasionally a one of in some of the decks.
Mm-hmm.
The fetch land should have been in that spot. I'm sorry, but that's, I think, should be obvious to everyone. I think expensive fetch lands are just a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, there are other problems that kind of go along with this. Like, I'm very concerned about the kind of trajectory of Modern. They really need a free counterspell, Cameron. Did you watch the match with the Vengevine deck?
No.
So the Ventrine deck has kind of gone on this like interesting trajectory where people thought it was too good, and now it's like kind of collapsing in on itself because a lot of people are trying out on Magic Online and it's super high variance. But this is the thing that worries me about Modern is you're going to end up playing all these Glass Cannon high variance decks because it's just the correct thing to do. So this guy goes, this is post-board. Faithless Looting, turn one, okay? Flips over a Bridge from Below. Goes, Hangerback Walker for zero, get a zombie. Walking Ballista for zero, get a zombie. Walking Ballista for zero, get a zombie. Pass. The control player goes, rest in peace. Okay?
Okay.
But it doesn't matter, because my guy on the Dredgevine deck goes, cool, cool, turn two, Bushwhacker, kicked, whatever that is, 11 you.
Yeah.
And then next turn, killed him. And I just saw that and I thought, if things stay the same and nothing gets banned and we continue on this trajectory, draws are going to get like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I bet when the Ventrine deck does nothing, it does stone nothing and sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just not the kind of Magic I like to play, Cameron. And the whole time you're just thinking, God, if there was just a Daze or a Force of Will or God, anything in this format,
yeah,
it would really be great. So, but the same people that will make apologies for that deck will tell me that Force of Will is, quote, and I quote, broken. You can make 11 power on turn two, but don't you dare counter a spell.
Yeah, that's not fun, Curtis. You can't cast your spells then.
God. If all of this time podcasting for Magic has taught me nothing, it's taught me that fun is a relative term.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, all right, Cameron. So we are going to get out of this segment. We're going to come back and talk a little bit of video games. All right, Cameron. So I'm going to assume since you were super busy this week, you also played none of the video games. Not that you play video games anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I played some video games maybe like 8 months ago.
Oh, nice. But, you know, nice. Yeah. Nice. I just... Cameron, I'm worried that you're devoting all your extra time to bettering yourself. Okay?
Fair analysis, I guess. I don't know.
And that's just not healthy. All right? So anyway, let's talk a little bit. I actually have played a ton of a game this week that you played before.
Mm-hmm.
In Hitman Season 1. So... the reason I'm playing this is it got added to Game Pass. So Game Pass is like the Xbox Netflix service. And PlayStation has one similar called PlayStation Now. But the problem with PlayStation Now is you have to play it through the internet. And I've had not such wonderful experiences streaming games. And my internet connection's pretty fast. So I don't know if it's just because I'm in Missouri and I'm far from whatever server farm is running it or whatever. Whereas the Game Pass, you actually download the full title and then you can just play it. And they've got a ton of stuff. They've got the Bethesda stuff. They just added Doom. So basically, the games that you think of that are the $15 and below at GameStop, they got a lot of those on Game Pass, you know? And I remember playing the training mission on Hitman, and I remember liking it, but not wanting to buy the episodes. And you had spoken really highly of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And you got several missions into it, right?
Yeah. I want to say I got maybe... 3/4 of the way through it, and I keep on, it's on my list of like games to go back to, and man, I absolutely love this game, and I can't remember if I've talked about it on the show, but I'm going to talk about it again because I'm so happy about this game. So Hitman, there's nothing to really know. You are a hitman. You are the guy that's going to go and assassinate a target or rescue a target, and it's all about infiltrating a highly secure area and then taking out your targets, right? And the games are really, really good because it's a sandbox within the mission structure. So the entire point of it is like you dress up in costumes and you try to approach the game in any way you want in order to take out your target. And because these systems are in place and how they all interact with each other, things can happen in the most hilarious of fashions. And it just makes for such a hilarious game. And that's what I love about it is that, like, sometimes my missions, like, I feel like I am James Bond going into a, like, the episode where there's a party being thrown and you have to get into the mansion and then, like, take out some targets or whatever. And, like, you are James Bond going through this and I'm, like, just being stealthy and, like, I am just a god in this mm-hmm. spy game. And then all of a sudden, I essentially just, like, trip over, like, whatever, right? And that causes havoc to just break loose. Everybody spots my location and, like, I just... Benny Hill ensues, like, with, like, the music and whatnot. And that's what's so great about this game is just how things can go so horribly wrong so quickly. But, man, I love this game. It's so much fun. I want to hear your experiences with it.
So I am on the third full mission, which is Marrakesh.
Marrakesh, okay.
So I completed Spain and what was the one before? The fashion
The fashion show, that's right.
The fashion show and the training missions. And this game is like someone made a game specifically for me. Because here's what I like about it. This is the exact level of storytelling Curtis wants. I get about 30 seconds. Here's the situation. Here's why these people suck. It's your job to take them out. Good luck. All right. That's what I need. That is Sega Genesis level of storytelling, yeah. And that's where my head is at. My heart is at, too. And the thing is so the first Dishonored is one of my favorite games ever. I'm a real perfectionist when it comes to stealth games, and so because I'm that way, stealth games can actually, I'll either love or hate. And so Dishonored mm-hmm. 2, I felt like they made it too difficult. A lot of the Metal Gear games, they are great. And then some of the, like, especially 4 and what I played of 5, were more like, hey, you get caught, you can kind of play jazz and do what you want. And Hitman has that. But if mm-hmm. you want to play Hitman like a perfectionist, you totally can. The previous Hitman game was pretty good. The big problem was if you wore a uniform, because one of the big kind of mechanical things of the Hitman games is you can dress up as, like, the mansion staff or a security guard after mm-hmm. you knock somebody out. And the big problem with the previous game was anyone with that same uniform would spot you. And what they've done in this game is they've said only certain people, supervisors or enforcers or whatever they yeah. call them, those are the only ones that can actually spot you. And so it kind of becomes this weird three-dimensional Pac-Man game. Mm-hmm. But the creativity in which you can exert on the game to do stuff is so awesome. I couldn't figure out how to get this one target, and so I ended up throwing a letter opener at her through her window, and the feeling of walking away after you've completed your mission unnoticed, Cameron, there's some real satisfaction there that I'm, like, uncomfortable talking about how good that feels. Like, whenever you, like... It says, unnoticed kill, you've hit your target, you've gone clean, you've hit no one else, and you just, like, stroll for, like, 30 seconds back to your car.
Yeah, yeah. The music kind of creeps in there. It's so good.
So, here I want to read this because I was kind of like, man, this game is amazing. And Giant Bomb actually gave it Game of the Year.
Okay.
In 2016. Okay. But some of the other reviews were not great. And so, like I do, I research too much and I read too much about... I wanted to go after some of the good reviews. Or some of the bad reviews. And one of these, like, this is Game Informer. The things that they mention as problems, I think, are great. Here's what they say. Locations are too big, okay? And it offers too many creative opportunities to snuff out your targets. Pulling off an elaborate kill means learning the layout of an environment, finding the necessary items for your scheme, figuring out guard routes, acquiring right disguises, and oftentimes maneuvering your target to the correct location by completing some secondary objective. It's an inordinate amount of prep work for the series. To me, that is exactly what I want.
I totally agree. Like, everything they said, like, go on. Like, giant levels, like, the Marrakesh level, like, I mean, there's, like, a protest happening, right? Is that the one that has a protest?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Just this huge level, and... There's so many different things happening. I don't know. Like, to me, that it just shows like the level of mastery like the developers and creators of this game have. But the way that because these things can actually play off of each other, that's where like it shines for me, is that it's a domino effect of like you can start a riot that will cause certain people to move in different locations, which then gives you that opportunity. And it's all about repeating that same game sometimes. Because yeah, there's nothing more hilarious and frustrating than like I said, like tripping over your own 2 feet and like having to restart a level after playing through it for so long. But there's also something really satisfying then when you do finish the level in the perfect objective fashion, right? I don't know.
Or like you just find out, oh, hey, I can escape on that airplane that's over there.
Yeah.
And you just fly off, you know, it's like awesome.
Yeah.
And so
or you want to be a runway model, you can be that too. Just
I saw that opportunity, but I didn't take it, you know, or like this dude. Yeah. There is just so much of those little touches, and what they want you to do is clearly repeat the missions. I'm mm-hmm. not there yet, but like you can actually level up to the point where you can start missions out with insane gear, and you know, it becomes more and more and more of a sandbox. I feel like, I mean, look, this game is 2 years old. The sequel's coming out in like a few months, and I'm kind of irritated that they're releasing the sequel in the fall, because everything's coming out in the fall, like always. And
that's what everybody does, yeah.
I mean, I'm rooting for them, but like, guys, you're releasing 2 weeks after Assassin's Creed, or like, what are you doing?
Yeah, really quick. I know I'm springing this on you. This was not in the show notes. Did you see the extended gameplay trailer for Red Dead?
Yes,
sir. And I'm curious, did that reinvigorate your excitement for it?
Yes.
Okay. Me too.
I was, let's say, very happy with how it looked. Not like graphically, of course, it looked great.
Yeah.
But in terms of what the gameplay loop is and all that, like, I feel like the trailer was not very good before this.
Yeah, I agree.
It showed off a lot of graphical prowess, but it kind of just felt like I didn't have a direction. Where if you look at the GTA 4 and 5 trailers specifically, and the Red Dead trailer, the Red Dead trailer, by the way, is like for the first one. This is like a legendary trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like just one of the shots is just the horses running, and you see the muscles on a PlayStation 3, dude. Like what? So yeah, I'm very heartened by it. I mean, if I'm just being totally honest with you, I bought my copy of Red Dead Redemption like 6 months ago or something. So,
yeah.
You know, hey, I'll be there day one. Like I'm gonna be the guy that walks into GameStop like and VIP everyone, like cut the line. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I did that with the Xbox copy of No Man's Sky, but I think that's because I was the only one that had it reserved.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Which is, I'm still playing. It's still good. Anyway, Cameron, so if someone would like to get a hold of you and tell you to finish Hitman and the Montana level, where could they find you?
They need to do that. Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.